Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Ad Passion and Stir, Big Chefs, Big Ideas, the new podcast from the anti-hunger organization, Share Our Strength. Listen at strength.org/passion.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Linda Liu, and on the line is my co-host in Hong Kong, Iris Van Kerkhove.
Hi, guys. It's 9 a.m. here in Hong Kong. I'm having my first coffee in a very long time, since I sound like I'm bouncing off the wall.
Very nice. I'm having my coffee to stay awake. So we are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, Iris and I dig deep on an Asian food dish. We trace its history, how it traveled to the West, and we interview experts on that topic.
And since I'm located here in Hong Kong, one of the major food capitals of Asia, I cover the Asian perspective and talk about the food scene out here on every episode.
Yeah, so there are many variations of snacky Asian noodles originating from street food culture that have made it big here in the States. So, you know, I've heard about dan dan mian, jiajiang mian, sesame noodles. Today, we are actually talking about a Taiwanese noodle dish that is maybe not as internationally famous yet, but it's growing in popularity amongst foodies, and that is danzi mian, or danzi noodles. So in the studio with us, we have our Taiwanese food experts, Josh Koo and Chef Trig Brown of Winsun Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. They serve a mix of Taiwan's greatest hits and also original dishes inspired by the cuisine. Josh and Trig opened Winsun together after taking a trip together to visit Josh's family in Taiwan. And before opening Winsun, Trig honed his craft at Upland. Before I chat with these guys, Iris, can you give us a little bit of background? What are danzi noodles?
Sure. So it's not to be confused with dan dan noodles from Sichuan, as you mentioned earlier. Danzi noodles are a dish from Taiwan that's often considered more of a snack than a main. It's said to be from Tainan, the oldest city in Taiwan, but from what I understand, it's pretty popular all over Taiwan as a street food. It's made up of wheat noodles and a shrimp-flavored broth with shrimp, coriander, and garlic. I think it also often has, like, minced pork, bean sprouts, can be topped with, like, egg or a pork ball.
Nice. So what's the history behind this dish?
The name literally means shoulder pole noodle, or it's sometimes called slack season danzi noodles, and I'll get into why that is. But a little background on Taiwan. Its population was made up of Taiwanese aboriginals until maybe the 17th century, but there were always fishermen from Fujian province in China visiting the coast because of the proximity. In the 17th century, the Dutch East India Company imported a lot of laborers from Fujian to Taiwan as well. And then when Taiwan was annexed to China in the Qing Dynasty in 1683, Taiwan was put under the jurisdiction of Fujian province. So there's a huge influence from Fujian, and you can definitely see that influence in Taiwan's food. So, for example, I was asking my friend here, who's not Taiwanese, but she knows a lot about Taiwanese food, if you know about danzimian. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, yeah, I had that last week at my grandma's place. And she's like, it's not Taiwanese, it's from Fujian. But then she also said the same thing about the gua bao, like the momofuku pork buns.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a Fujian thing. But the story goes that there was a fisherman from Tainan, the oldest city in Taiwan, who descended from fishermen from Fujian. And he started selling noodles to make some money during the off-season, because basically in the summer it's too dangerous for fishing because of typhoons. So eventually it sold so well that it became his main gig. And then before he had like set up a proper stall, he started out just carrying his noodles on shoulder poles in the streets. And on his lanterns it would say slack season danza noodles, hence the name. But the story doesn't contradict what my friend's story was, and it could very well be a dish that was popularized in Taiwan, but maybe based off a dish from Fujian.
Oh, got it. Yeah, that's interesting. What a, I don't know, good business venture. So do you think this dish is known and loved outside of Taiwan? It sounds like it's not at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm sort of excited that we have the guys from Winsun here today to talk about it, because in our past episodes, we usually talk about very famous, iconic mm-hmm. dishes, which is great as well. But a part of what we want to do at Feast Meets West is spread awareness about other dishes that maybe, you know, aren't super trendy yet, but are definitely worth trying. So needless to say, it's definitely not Asia's or even Taiwan's most famous export compared to, you know, the bao or bubble tea. But I think it is starting to get a little more well-known. I'm just surprised that here in Hong Kong, A, Taiwanese food isn't as huge as you'd think it is, given our proximity and love of Taiwan, and B, it's really hard to find danza noodles. I try to get a, you know, bowl of noodles before the show, but the only place my friend could find for me was like an hour and a half commute away. And I just think, like, right now, Taiwanese food in Hong Kong, it's much more based on like chains, like bigger chains. And like Din Tai Fung is, I love Din Tai Fung, so that's a huge chain in Taiwan, and that's very popular here. But in terms of more like smaller, you know, mom and pop or like, you know, artisanal Taiwanese restaurants run by Taiwanese people, that you don't really see. But thankfully, we're so close to Taiwan, so we can just go there and try the food.
Yeah, it's kind of good to know that.
How about in New York?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of Taiwanese food here in New York, I think it's, you know, quite welcome in the food scene. The dishes typically feel accessible, and a lot of it feels like comfort food, and who doesn't like that? But I mean, personally, I feel like there's not enough of it outside of Winsun, which has really helped put this cuisine on the map. There are a handful of like very legit Taiwanese restaurants in Flushing that I know of, but they're like way out there, like far from the trains out there. You need a car to access them. So, I mean, in terms of danza noodles now, I hadn't heard of it until trying it for the first time at Winsun. So, I mean, I'm familiar with the Asian noodles concept, where it's like a snack or appetizer or found in street food. But like yourself, I'm super excited to learn more from the guys at Winsun on this particular dish.
Cool.
Yeah. So, thank you, Iris, for sharing your background and research on the dish and about Hong Kong's Taiwanese food scene. So now here to share their insights on danza noodles and what it's like running an American Taiwanese restaurant in Brooklyn are Trig and Josh from Winsun. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
So to start, could you just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Well, my name is Josh. This is Josh. And Trig is obviously my partner here. Trig is a chef. And I guess I'm more of the business construction side of things and the Taiwanese side of things. But, you know, as Trig says, he's a
an egg.
Oh.
Somebody call me that. I like it.
Yeah. So to clarify, that is what now? Like white on the outside and yellow on the inside. Okay.
Yeah. He's an egg with a fever. You know. just kidding. But yeah, I'm from New York, and my parents came over after college from Taiwan, and eventually made their way up to New York from the South, and just pretty much grew up, you know, living through the American dream, and I hadn't really got back into Taiwanese food until I was in college. And so that kind of was the starting mm-hmm. point for me. And then I met Trig later on, about 5-6 years ago, at a mutual friend's party. Actually, it was also Trig's party. I think he was doing a cookout.
Yeah. So my name's Trig, and I've been cooking, I guess, you know, since I was in high school and started washing dishes. And, you know, I've continued to cook, and you know, this one spot I worked at in college.
Where were you based? Or have you always been like East Coaster?
Yeah, always East Coast. I was in Richmond, Virginia, you know, until college. I went moved to Charlottesville, and I sort of stepped up from like you know, diner style restaurant to, you know, a classy hotel, and then into the Charlottesville restaurant scene, which is which was
all American boy.
I guess so. I started working with this guy Pei Jin Chang, and he's Chinese, but his family's from Taiwan, mm-hmm. and so me like kind of understanding what that means, you know, not being Taiwanese but being from Taiwan and still identifying as Chinese politically, definitely, you know, enlightened me, at least in, you know, to Taiwan's complex history. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot about, you know, the discipline of cooking, working for Pei. And he always set the bar really high for me and pushed me to, you know, push myself. And when I moved to New York to continue cooking, I didn't go to school for cooking. When I moved here and started working for Crafted Hospitality and Tom Colicchio's restaurant group, I happened to meet Josh and you know, at a cookout. So, you know, when he told me his family's from Taiwan, he's Taiwanese, we you know, we kind of like bonded about that. I was like, yeah, I'm a mentor. You know, he's Chinese, but his family's from Taiwan, and
yeah,
so we started like going out to eat together, and you know, trying to figure, you know, really like pursue, like I was pursuing an education. Josh is really guiding me through that, and like, you know, sharing a lot of his heritage and culture with me.
Mm-hmm. What like drew you to? I mean, other than kind of having this mentor, what drew you to the Taiwanese cuisine? Was it like the taste, the adventure?
And
Josh.
It was just Josh and his friendship. You know, our friendship is really based on, you know, learning about Taiwanese food, and you know, it became like a fun thing we did in our free time to like something we started kind of researching and then turned into a business plan. And I guess our goal is really just to translate the impression, you know, that, you know, translate kind of our version of Taiwanese food for our neighborhood in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. in a humble way that's not, you know.
Yeah. And Josh, what were you doing before becoming like a first-time restaurateur?
Well, I'm still doing it a little less now, trying to transition out, but I'm a property manager, and mostly, you know, kind of day-to-day maintenance, repairs, back office stuff. Mostly buildings in the Bronx, like mm-hmm. Low-income housing, mm-hmm. Section 8 type of stuff. And so, you know, I was familiar with real estate in that world, and, you know, and construction, and so that's kind of my experience this past, you know, 10 years.
Got it.
Probably actually a lot. Not as long as that, but yeah. And then you know, meeting Trig, and then having that become you know, what it is now, you know, just through interest in where I'm from, mm-hmm. and the food, you know, that my people, you know, ate, you know,
yeah.
and eat still today. and why it tastes so good, you know, just really simply put, you know, like...
Truth.
Yeah. And talking to Trig about it, you know, I just remember, like, when we first connected, it was mostly, you know, breaking down a dish, you know, a simple dish, and like, man, what's that flavor? What, you know, what's giving me that...
All the taste profiles.
Right, and he would just break it down, like, so easily, and I'm just like, wow, like, that's... Like, that's food, I guess, you know, and so that's really what drew me.
That's an awesome story, and it's so different from what, or Winston is so different from what you were doing previously. It definitely took, like, this strong bond of your friendship to, like, propel you guys to make this, like, would you say it's, like, a leap of faith to...
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Sure. Oh, shit, my pants for a good while we were working on this.
So what does the name Winston mean?
Winston. So it's actually a phonetic translation of my grandfather's company, my agong, my mom's dad, and he had a textile company in Taiwan back in the 70s and 80s, and it was called Ingsen, and it's like a kind of an outdated word in Chinese. I think Taiwanese, it still has stronger, you know, relevance, and I think in Cantonese, actually, it, like, has a stronger relevance than in just Mandarin, which is something I discovered through the restaurant, like, by people coming up and, like, talking to me about it. Because we do have the Chinese name on our sign as well. And, so it just, you know, it just kind of ties back to history and family and, you know, the fundamentals, I would say.
Nice. Great roots.
But it means abundance. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. It's overflowing with profit, literal translation, and then, but, you know, abundance.
Yeah, it translates over very well in English, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very thoughtful. Good job on that one.
Masculine.
So I'm curious, could you describe, like, how you came up with your menu at Winston? And, like, just, like, maybe describe a little bit about the food that you serve.
I mean, Josh and I together, you know, we would, like, I mean, it really started, like, you know, reviewing a lot of our favorite restaurants in Flushing and, you know, going over our favorite dishes and, you know, really, like, you know, returning to Brooklyn and cooking them in my kitchen or Josh's kitchen. Like, one time we just had a party and, like, cooked a bunch of Taiwanese food or you know.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of, you know, exploring and, you know, some things like, you know, fly's head, which is something that Josh and I really love. It's like a dish very close to our hearts, along with, you know, Lu Ro Fan and, you know, a few other dishes. You know, they became, you know, dishes that we would look at and try, like Josh had, try to break down, and, you know, we used those as kind of like footholds and, you know, just sort of went from there. Our trip to Taiwan was hugely influential as well.
Mm-hmm. How many trips have you guys done to Taiwan?
Together, just one. And we have another one planned and set up for April. So we're super excited for that.
Yeah.
Super excited.
Yeah. I mean, which is, you know, the trip also, yeah, we're pumped. It's been
you guys have been working hard.
Exciting
though.
The first trip, you know, that's the whole way, you know, Josh is like telling me about this this noodle, Danzi noodle, and in Taiwan, or, you know, when Tainan City, where Josh's family is from, they actually call it dan dan mian, or you know, I guess they call it both, but we most commonly heard of it as dan dan mian, and I think, you know, we decided to go with danza because it has that history there. Mm-hmm. I mean, so does dan dan, but we wanted to distinguish it because it is not like the Szechuan dan dan.
Yeah, that's
noodles.
My typical,
everyone is so,
right, association. Yeah,
we just wanted to be very careful of that because, you know, a lot of people come into a restaurant and they have expectations based on what they understand, and, you know, Taiwanese history and especially Taiwanese food culture is very shrouded to most people. you know, at least in America. You know, I don't feel like they're not outside of California.
I'd say like one out of every five people that come in, like, oh, Thai food.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, do you guys have pad Thai?
Oh my gosh.
We're like, yeah, no, it's,
but that's totally cool. You know, that's like we understand. You know, and we also understand what that means for us, and that means, you know, educating as well as, you know, kind of setting it up in a way to ease people into it, you know, and it's been a fun challenge for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So we're going to take a really quick break and we'll come right back and talk more about Danzen noodles.
Yeah. Cool.
Passion and Stir, Big Chefs, Big Ideas, the new podcast from the anti-hunger organization Share Our Strength, brings together your favorite chefs and amazing social innovators to discuss how food impacts almost every major issue you care about: your health, your environment, and your children's ability to learn. Uplifting stories from chefs like Michelin star winner Jose Andres.
People want our respect. People don't want our dirty shoes and our old pants. People want us to show up and show them that they really matter to us.
And Top Chef winner Brian Baltaggio.
Hunger has many different faces. You can walk down the street every day and see children playing in the playground. They're hungry. They don't know where they're going to get their next meal. They don't know if they're going to have dinner.
Can be heard at strength.org/passion. You can help change the world by changing the way we think about food. Listen at strength.org/passion. That's strength.org/passion. Hi, you're listening to Feast Meets West. Welcome back. We're talking about Danzen noodles today here with the guys from Winsun, Josh and Trig. So, you know, very interesting actually to pick a not so popular dish to focus on. Just curious, I want to know why you guys decided to talk about Danzen noodles today as opposed to another, like, perhaps more well-known Taiwanese dish.
I mean, I think the identity it has with Tainan City, because, you know, aside from the fact that your family's from there, like, it was, you know, very unique, you know, the food there. You know, there are a couple of attributes we can... We noted from Tainan,
tell me more. How do you mean, like, it ties to the identity of, like, Tainan?
I mean, I don't want to go so far as to, like, try to
the Wikipedia,
give the identity of Tainan City, but, like, through my study of Taiwan's history and, you know, the historical significance of Tainan City, it just seemed like an old dish with an old story that people really celebrate there. And, you know, that is very tied, that's tied very closely to, you know, my partner's food memories. So, you know,
Food memories. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it's a very old dish. Like Iris was mentioning earlier. Hi, Iris.
Hi, Iris.
Okay. Hi.
There you are.
What did you say?
They said hi, Iris. They wanted to include you in the conversation. Yeah.
So, like, what she was saying, you know, just like the history and relevance of it, it goes beyond, you know, like Chinese occupation and, like, you know, back towards the Japanese occupation of the island. And I think it just, like, ties all that together pretty neatly in something that's just, you know, a bowl of noodles.
Right, kind of its place in time.
Right.
And, like, the Zhaojiangmian, like, that has roots in, you know, northern China. And, you know, like, Koreans have, you know, my girlfriend, she refuses to call it Zhaojiangmian. She calls it Zhaojiangmian. And, there's roots to that dish beyond Taiwan. And, you know, from our understanding and studies, you know, the roots seem to be in Tainan City, and it was very interesting to learn about. It's also the claim to fame in
Fujian. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Josh, did you grow up eating it, like, at home, or visited Taiwan?
When I visited, I remember in college the first time that I had it. I was going back for, you know, a family thing, and And my uncle brought me there, like, as soon as I got to the airport. So I got to Taipei, then took a train, high-speed rail down to Tainan. And he took me straight to this spot to eat, called Du Xiao Ye. And they're, like, a really well-known danzamien. They're very known for their noodle, the danza noodle there. And it just blew me away, like, seeing the guy's noodle station. You know, he's, like, basically on a little stool with his knees up. And you got this, like, old ceramic pot that has had this broth just reducing in it constantly for, like, I don't know how long.
Yeah.
The mother sauce, or something?
They don't. Well, it's like the pot, the cauldron or whatever, you know, ceramic cauldron, whatever you want to say, for the meat sauce, I believe, actually.
Okay, yeah.
And they don't wash it. It hasn't been, you know, changed out, and, you know, I forget what the amount of time it was, but the idea is that it builds flavor. Mm-hmm, and, you know, right. We'd totally do that if it wasn't for the New York City Health Department.
Yeah. Like, at A rating?
So into that. Yeah, we got an A.
What's up? But yeah. Well, technically, we could just do it now, right?
Yeah.
And just put it away. But yeah, no. And then just, you know, flavor memory.
Yeah,
it has such a huge impact on me. I just never knew something could taste like this,
mm-hmm.
and obviously just so good, and so, you know, and kind of coming back to that, you know, when Trig and I went on this trip to Taiwan together, that was definitely the spot that we wanted to just stop at, just so he could try it out, and I was, like, just watching him as he ate it, like,
and the reaction,
you know. Yeah, amazing.
So that was kind of the kind of research process on how you guys came to include that.
Yeah,
sort of a roundabout way, because, like, we didn't have it originally on the menu, mm-hmm. although we wanted to do it.
Right, I mean, it's something that you had, like, you know, you talked about, but we didn't know where to get danza mien or danza mien in New York, and. So it was one of those things I tried for the first time, actually in Tainan City. So, you know, there, and it became one of my food memories as well. And like Josh explained, like, you see them pick up the whole dish right there, and it was just awesome. And it took me, you know, we didn't even start out with it on our menu. It took me a while to figure it out, and
mm-hmm.
I'm still learning, a student of Taiwanese food. I'm still learning, obviously, and we didn't feel like we were ready to release it until a few months ago. And
So how do you make it at your restaurant, and how's it different from what you've had in Tainan?
So at the restaurant, the historical significance of the one single shrimp garnish is, you know, because it was too dangerous to fish for the, you know, to go fishing, and, you know, they sparingly used one shrimp per bowl, and the meat sauce is a pork sauce. But since we're not experiencing scarcity with shrimp, we're getting really nice, you know, big prawns from South Carolina, North Carolina. I actually grind equal parts shrimp and then braise it with heritage pork and to make my meat sauce. So it's not just a pork sauce. It's a shrimp and pork sauce. So it's, like, really fortified. We take all the shells and steep them in a superior broth, which is a Chinese stock with unsmoked ham and pork bones and chicken bones. And I roast those, so you get, like, a really deep, rich flavor in the broth. And you know, the shrimp and pork meat sauce, braised mm-hmm. meat sauce, kind of, you know, fuses with that in the bowl on top of the noodle. And it's, you know, it's a symbol. It's not like a glazed pasta. It's a bowl of broth flavored and, you know, and fortified with shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the noodles, raw garlic is, like, a very important flavor that we noticed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It has, like, a very, a very unique flavor, raw garlic, when it's just, like, barely cooked or bloomed in the broth. So that was, like, one, you know, and we decided to even, like, go forward with that, like, garlic flavor. Do a little, like, garlic confit sauce on the side, on the rim of the plate, just to, you know, have a little bit more sauce. And then we sear that one shrimp to just kind of, like, honor the tradition of the noodle. Also, like, you know, a lot of places you'll find bean sprouts, like, cooked with the noodle. we don't do that, but you know, maybe we will. I when Iris was talking about the history, I forgot about the pork meatball or the fish meatball that you sometimes find. I'd love to do something like that. That'd be really fun. So, we're always trying to get better and, make subtle changes that mm-hmm. enhance the, our food, whether it's, via authentic avenues or, creative spins and,
That's cool. It's like you're growing together with the dish and the neighborhood and your clientele as well. So like every time or like every other month they come back, it's like, oh, I remember this, but it's a little subtly changed. And
just tricking them.
How do the customers respond to it? Is it one of the more popular dishes or?
It's definitely one of our more popular dishes. One time somebody got it to go and they called the restaurant. They're like, hey, we're a little bummed out, with their to-go order. There was only one shrimp in that shrimp dish. And I called him back, and I was like, hey, man, I completely understand where you're coming from, but, that's actually, I told him the whole story. It's essentially the story that you said earlier, Iris, missing a few facts, but, about, why, what the significance of the single shrimp. And I was like, please come back. Let me buy you a bowl of noodles and show you, why this is a, why this is an important dish to us and, why it's not just one shrimp on the top and what that means. And he was so cool. And he came back and, he's a regular now. So it's like, it's fun.
Yeah. That's a great story.
That's awesome.
How would you say it should be eaten? Is it the start of a meal? Should it just be a snack? Is it complementary to a larger meal?
Well, so portion-wise, we do it a little differently, just because of this whole translation and the way our menu is situated as is. I think traditionally, though, it's always been a midday snack, take a break from work, eat a quick bowl of noodles and, get back to work, whatnot. So, the way we do it obviously is a larger portion and, I think you just scarf it up as fast as you can.
Yeah.
That's the best way.
Slurp it up. Yeah. The right way to eat noodles.
Yeah. If you eat too, I'll buy you beer.
Yeah.
But it's,
limited time only.
Yeah. But it is. We'd love to. I think we'd love to have a restaurant situation where we were serving, the original portion. Like that's one of our favorite parts about the dish. However, it's like Josh said, the way it's situated on the menu. We're a sit down restaurant, and mm-hmm. Format wouldn't work with us. But down the line, I think it would be a dream come true if Josh and I could sell that noodle for a different price and a different format and mm-hmm. Make that work for us. That would be amazing.
Cool. Spreading the gospel. So what are some important aspects to keep in mind when making a good bowl of danzen mian? Key aspects.
Love.
Ingredients.
Yeah. Be happy when you make it. Is that corny? No, good broth is definitely key. Broth is the key. A good broth, good meat sauce, and a nice piece of shrimp. I think it's been really fun to. I always like to get ingredients from Virginia. From Heritage Foods USA, I get sugar cured Virginia ham for a nutritious sandwich that we had at night markets in Taiwan. And that's getting that ham from Virginia is fun because I'm from Virginia. And I like I grew up going to the beach every now and then, and we in North Carolina or Nag's Head and South Carolina, and getting those prawns for me is it's attached to memory, and that's that's fun, and that high quality shrimp is just delicious. So I think cooking with with intent and not mm-hmm. just throwing it together, and I think that's a huge part of it too.
You've definitely made it your own food memory. That's very clear. Do you think that danzen mian will rise in popularity and achieve dandan mian status or sesame noodles?
We hope so.
Yeah, hope so. I mean, I think it would have to distinguish itself, obviously, in more ways than Whether it's, you know, kind of keeping in with the traditional portions and then just having it. You know, I could, like, you know, I think we were talking about this the other day, like, we could totally see it, like, being like a little stall, like, downtown and just turning out little bowls of noodles. For
yeah, folks. It's fast pickup, so, you know, it'd be a great, like, lunch cart thing, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd work well with the pop-up concept, too. The music festivals, I don't know. There's a lot going on in the city.
So a bunch of hippies holding chopsticks. Sweet.
Yeah, so for those who are completely new to this dish, what kind of message do you hope to share with them at Winsun? You kind of touched on that, like the caller from the delivery on this, and kind of just like sharing some, like, and educating on Taiwanese cuisine. Is there anything like particular you want to...
I mean, for me, just, you know, raising awareness and, you know, kind of like what goes in line with our overall goal in general is just like, you know, translating the, you know, cultural impression that Taiwan has had on us, you know, like for Josh, that's like a lifetime and, you know, family history and beyond. And, you know, for me, it's like an educational thing and, you know, like I, and something that's more recent. So, I mean, just kind of sharing that, because, you know, the more bridges you build and, you know, mutual understandings there are, the better, you know, things are. So,
for sure. And so to,
that makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
Ditto.
So to add on to that, what are your thoughts on Taiwanese food in general here in New York City? Do you think you're
I think it's definitely underrepresented, I think, but if you look for it, it's there.
It's definitely around. And I think just kind of bringing it to the forefront a little bit more and, you know, the circles that we run with is something that, like, is personally like a agenda of ours.
Yeah.
But then, you know,
yeah, I mean, to that point, what's next for Winsun? Are you guys...
Like another one?
Yeah. Winsun 2, the second?
Yeah. Or, you know, hopefully we can get Jeremy Lin to come through.
Yeah.
I'll settle for that and just have him, you know, come through, you know.
Seriously, if you guys do have a second one, would it be, like, in the same neighborhood? You guys going to branch out, like, region, like, location?
We've definitely thought about stuff like Oakland or, you know, maybe back home, even in, like, Richmond or, you know. But I think what we keep coming back to is Brooklyn. And I think there, you know, it's...
Yeah, we want to double down here and really see if we can make it work, you know, and push it, like you're saying, like...
Maybe a more consolidated concept, like not in the same neighborhood, but, you know, closer to our, you know, where we live out in Bushwick or Bed-Stuy.
Yeah. It might allow for even like a stronger voice with that kind of presence.
Yeah. And who knows, if that's proved to be successful, then, you know, we can then, you know, have more to play with, I guess.
Very cool.
So.
Yeah. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Did we learn about danzu noodles, also maybe some, like, business tactics here. You know, it was really cool to kind of talk about a less well-known dish.
Yeah, thank you, Trig and Josh. If all goes as planned, I'm going to be in Taiwan in May.
Ooh.
And I'm definitely going to look for some danzu noodles. And it's cool because, like, I'll have the, like... story behind the dish.
Oh yeah. Well, if you're in Taiwan in May, we're going to be there first week of May. FYI.
Oh really? Oh, yeah. Amazing. Yeah,
three
maybe
digits.
We can meet up there.
Yeah,
like 20 numbers.
Yeah. We'll just let's loop up on the email.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll link up.
Thank you guys for having us.
Yeah,
thank you.
Good. I also, speaking of emails, like, this is random, but I noticed you guys were talking about how you guys like to get out of Brooklyn into Queens. So that's something we have in common, and we can talk about that. I love Queens. Very dear to my heart.
Hell yeah.
Where were you at in Queens?
I was in Jamaica, Queens for a while.
Oh, no shit.
And then Woodside.
I was born in Jamaica.
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
Spent a good part of my life there. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, that's awesome. Wait, what are you doing in Hong Kong?
Sorry?
What are you doing in Hong Kong?
Did you say you're coming to Hong Kong? Couldn't catch that.
Iris is holding up the Eastern perspective of Feast Meets West in Hong Kong. She's the correspondent there.
Sweet. No, that's
full time.
Hey, now. Cool. You can dream, right?
You guys are big.
So thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. Make sure to catch Feast Meets West every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Heritage Radio Network. Subscribe to Feast Meets West on iTunes or Stitcher, and we'll be back next week with more awesome guests in the world of Asian food.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.